Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Adventures in Truth podcast. I'm here with my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Smith. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Jim.
How are you?
Wonderful.
Good. Another awesome day for a podcast, and we are especially excited because we have a special guest with us today, and that is Paul Diamond. Paul is an incredible shaman from Peru who is actually live with us from Peru. We thought it would be fitting for the last podcast of the group that we have been doing over the last five shows, or this is the fifth of that, I think, we have been documenting and talking about Dr. Jeff's process and experimentation in with mushrooms and with a hero's dose of psilocybin, and being able to break that whole process down. It's been quite an extraordinary story and evolution, part of which was an amazing download for a process that we're calling the death pose. And we've looked into that process since our last podcast. I've flown to San Diego. Jeff and I put together the outlines of a workshop. We actually conducted that workshop day before yesterday to a huge success. We had about 10 people, and they all reported some form of a mystical experience as a result. And more importantly, that the impact of what the vision and the work has been about is fulfilling itself in that process. So we're being able to actually, you know, to actualize the download and see the impact that it's creating. And of course, making adjustments, and which will be the case for a little while here. We're thrilled to have Paul with us. Paul, again, is a shaman down in Peru. He has a center called Tantraya, right? Tantraya. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm. Tantraya. Yeah, a combination of Tantra and ayahuasca was the original idea. Although, of course, we do other things at the center. But
yes, you do. And
it's a catchy name.
It is. It's a wonderful name. I love it. And more specifically, in Paul's shamanism, he is an ayahuascaro. That is, in my mind, maybe not in his, but in my mind, I was thinking about this last night because I was going to say, well, it's a master of the medicine, but really it's not the master of the medicine. It's the master of the playground of the medicine, in a sense, in that it's being able to guide people through and with the medicine so seamlessly and brilliantly I had the good fortune of getting to experience that with Paul about 3 years ago, and looks like again here in the very near future. So we're super excited about that. But Paul, I just want to turn it over to you for a minute just to say hi, and we're thrilled you're here again and recording this time.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, Jim, for the introduction. I'm English by birth, of course. I live in Peru and have my center in Peru, but I'm not Peruvian by birth. And I've been exploring the world's mystical and spiritual traditions now for around 30 years of my life, really even before that, actually, if I'm being honest, you know, and really kind of went as deeply as I could into various traditions and various schools and various practices, and to see what kind of results I could accrue as a result of that kind of intensity. And, you know, kind of studied these things on a sort of academic level at certain times in my life. Also, I have a master's degree in the study of mysticism and religious experience. And I kind of, you know, put it all together in a kind of a very useful kind of system or methodology for personal awakening that we teach and practice at my center here at Tantraya, including plant medicines, but not restricted to.
Beautiful. That's perfect. So we're going to have a sort of an open discussion, and Paul, we'd love for you to jump in. And I'm sure we'll reference to you directly as we kind of talk about this recap, it was quite an extraordinary experience from the listening end, for sure, from getting to pull it all together to you know, be able to walk into a room and help people shift state and bring them into a place of being able to then have that mystical experience, that shift and release in their own fields. And so I'm going to stop talking so Jeff can carry on with the continuation and the final chapter of this particular piece of our experience.
Right. Thanks, Jim. And Paul, what a pleasure to have you here today. I'm really excited to hear from what Jim has told me and the little I've gotten to know you about a true master to help us understand more about what I experienced and what we can do with what I experienced in workshops so we can help others. So it's really a pleasure and a joy. I don't even know what you're going to say yet, but I already know it's going to be good, and I'm looking forward to hearing that. So
Thank you.
At the end of our last podcast, we had gotten to the point in the journey, and this was a 12-hour journey with the plant-based medicine, and we're wrapping it up now to where I had spent about 6 hours after the plant-based medicines had been metabolized. I was implored to sit in front of an altar for about 6 hours and just wrote down my experience and sat and meditated and waited for more inspiration and more guidance in what to do with this experience. My intention was, prior to taking the plant-based medicine, my intention was for me to know that I was supposed to be part of an effort to go to Los Angeles to assist with eradicating homelessness in Skid Row by being asked to be part of a process of doing that. I needed to personally know if that was for me to be a part of, and if so, how to do it in a way that was going to be successful and bringing something to that project that hadn't been done before, because Skid Row has been an issue for 100 years, and for 100 years, people have been going there with good intentions, well-funded organizations that have failed at dealing with that problem. So for me to be involved with it, I didn't want to just pony up and go along with another organization and another attempt at trying to do something that hasn't worked before. So what I felt so convinced of and empowered by was this download that I got through my own journey of confronting death many times during my plant-based experience. And it specifically showed up in areas of my body that I was holding tension, that I was physically in pain of, or emotionally suffering, and things that I didn't even know. So in the previous podcasts, we talked about I started kind of like not convulsing, but making very awkward movements as I was laying on the floor and just found myself contorting and moving. And then all of a sudden going, oh, wow, that muscle underneath my fourth rib, that's really been bothering me for a long time, but I've kind of pushed that down into my subconscious mind that I don't even really pay attention to it anymore, but yet it really hurts. And then as I would really find a position to accentuate it and hold it and then take in a breath, the fullest breath I could take, and close off the perineum, that part of our body that we hold the urine in, and just clench down and just hold it till I couldn't stand it anymore. And then vigorously exhale and let that energy out. In that moment, each time I did that, I got a vision of an injury, an insult, a mortal wound that I had experienced. It was there, and it was like, wow, all of a sudden I'm a gladiator and I just got run through with a spear. Or you heard in the previous podcasts all of these different experiences that I had. And each one of them was just like, at the end, I'd lay back down and then just have to do the integration. And I was encouraged to forgive whoever or whatever assaulted me, or even forgiving myself for trying to climb a cliff and fell off and killed myself. Because there's all these different ways that I was having experience with of ending a life. Or even the whole past life thing, if you're not into that, you've seen a movie of somebody dying, and we absorb that into our field as well, or you read a story, or even if you've read a classic like Moby Dick, you know, Moby Dick eats a few of the sailors, and your mind conceptualizes that, and we hold that somewhere in our body. It shows up that we've established the notion that pain is the manifestation of fear, and fear isn't real. Danger is real, fear is not. So as we were going through this whole process, and I got this beautiful way of us of transforming our pain out of our body, I wanted to know that it could be done without being under the influence of plant-based medicines, because not everybody's going to be into that, and we don't always have time to go take 12 hours and do something like that. So the next morning, after I wrote all this down, I began to recreate what I experienced the night before. And I was able to do it again. I was able to do it with the same vision, with the same vigor, with the same energy. And it kind of shocked me, because I thought, oh, wow, I thought that was only going to be available under the influence of the plant-based medicines. But what happened was the plant-based medicines opened my awareness. It was just like the curtains came open. It's like, that's all that happened, is now I can see through the window. It's like, yeah, that was always there, but I just couldn't see it. And it was like revealed to me that it is there. So after the ceremony, we all got together and we shared our experiences. It was a beautiful time of bringing it together for everybody. And then later that day, I was just on cloud nine. Later that night, I would feel pain in my body again. And I was very quickly able to isolate it and go into a moment of death pose again, as I was just like, oh, wow, this is really something you can do in the moment. You don't have to go meditate for 30 minutes. You got a pain that just shows up for you. It's your body telling you it's time to do something with that. Take it out of the physical, back into the metaphysical, and transition it from fear over to love. And it will leave. It will go. It has no purpose in your body any longer. And we're learning to fill ourselves with light and love by exercising all of the pain and the fear out of our body. And it was just so amazing to me that even within the next couple of days, sitting in a hot tub for 3 hours without the hot tub being on, like at 3 a.m, I didn't want to leave the hot tub. I was just so blissed out that the simplest little pleasures were delights beyond any ability that I'd had to have delight over something so simple before. And I was able to see my heartbeat in the hot tub. And as light was showing behind me, I got to see how my heart is creating a field around me and how it was reflecting off of the wall. And I'm just, oh my gosh, it's like, I was still under the lingering effects of the plant-based mushrooms, but everything around me was still connected, and it was just so alive and beautiful. And you can tell right now, just me reliving it a little bit in my mind, you know, brings up a level of joy and exuberance that, you know, it's compelling. And, you know, I want to share this with other people. And so I began to talk with Jim about it, and it's like, Jim, we got to do a workshop on this. And Jim and I actually were able to repeat it. He was the first one that I talked with about it, and we were able to recreate it for Jim. He's had an experience with it himself before we did our workshop. And I took it into my practice with people that I had been practicing psychology with for a long time and had a great relationship with, and guided them through the moment of death experience, the protocol, and encouraged them to keep doing it at home on their own as they become aware of a pain or a discomfort or an ache or even a dis-ease. As you know, long chronic pain held in the body over time takes it to the next level in the state of a dis-ease. And we don't have to accept those. We don't have to live with those. So anyway, I think that probably brings everything to a close as far as from what it was like for me to go to the ceremony, the experience there, the after experience, and it still continues. It's just like that has opened up my mind to a level that I've been waiting for decades, just to comprehend and see things. Everything is so much more connected and in flow now for me. The workshop was absolute confirmation that this protocol that we've developed, right now I'd call it maybe the 80% solution. You know, we're probably 80%, 70 to 80% there on how we would take it from a 2-hour workshop and spin it into a week long or a weekend workshop, and then eventually a weekend workshop. But there's really something to what we're doing, and it's exciting. And I can't wait to hear what you would add or mm-hmm. or your commentary on what I've shared so far.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing, Jeff. I'd like to ask a question to begin with in response, and that is, Jeff, what was your relationship with death like before this experience?
I don't know how to answer that question.
I mean, do you feel that you had, a certain amount of fear or trepidation or discomfort when you thought about the subject, or you avoided the subject entirely, or?
So prior to the ceremony, I've always been a believer that there's no fear or sting in death, that all the research that I've been aware of with regard to near-death experiences, people talk about their soul and spirit just slips out of the body and it doesn't really experience the gruesome, horrifying, unbearable. It just notices. Soul, spirit slips out, looks back at the body and goes, oh, wow, that's really amazing or interesting, but it doesn't really experience it. I'm convinced that death is not something that you have to, oh my gosh, I couldn't deal with that, because we don't. The research says that you slip out, and if you do, if your death, your life isn't over and you are going to come back and do some more of your life, you slip back in, and it just wasn't horrible. So I know I'm going on and on to try to answer your question. But no, I don't think that I had a fear of death. I think that I saw it as a graduation. I think that I saw it as this chapter's closed. Now there's a new chapter and it's exciting. It's like a graduation.
Based on my experience of you, Jeff, if I may interject a little bit in there, one of the things that the first thought that I had when Paul asked the question was, he went from a mental understanding of what he thought about death to an experiential place that validated what he believed, but didn't have that belief before. Hmm. Now he does. That's my experience from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Is that fair, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very interesting. I think that, of course, we have, as a culture, really sort of run away from the subject as much as we can. You know, there really hasn't been much of a Western engagement with the realms of death and dying beyond, you know, Kubler-Ross and, you know, these sort of very famous studies, and that we've really lost a very, very important role in our culture, which is the role of the psychopomp. Of course, we have midwives who bring babies into the world, and in the olden world, they had these psychopomps who escorted the soul or the spirit, or at least the dying person, into the realms of death. And, you know, that was a very essential spiritual function and role.
Can you spell that word? I've never heard that word.
P-S-Y-C-H-O-P-O-M. Psychopomp. Yeah, P-O-M-P.
Psychopomp. Okay.
And like, this like was a very traditional role.
Pomp and circumstance would be like a method, a protocol. It's a protocol. You know,
yes. And it was, you know, the role of the, you know, partly the role of the shaman, partly the role of the priest, you know, but it was an essential role, you know, in terms of spiritual growth. You know, unfortunately now we have to rely, of course, on, you know, mainstream religious structures who really don't really actually know that much about the death and dying process. You know, really we have to turn our mind to the East and the Eastern traditions before we can be trying to find a very useful map or topography of the death and after death realms. And of course, the various cultures around the world have mapped these conditions very effectively. You know, the Egyptian Book of the various books of the dead, in fact, you know, Egyptian Book of the Dead, Tibetan Book of the Dead. And, you know, these are maps of the afterlife, maps of how to die effectively. And someone was supposed to kind of guide you through that process. And that was the psychopomp's role, essentially. And I think that as a result of how our having turned our back on that realm, we've lost access to a realm of great power. And that power is what you're touching upon in this work that has manifested. You know, I feel a very strong call from the ancestors in this work that you're doing. You know, I feel a very strong call that the ancestors as a conglomerate of energy, let's say, are really trying to pull through that kind of relationship that we have lost, and to try and make it more apparent once again, because it is an essential and necessary backdrop to our lives to engage the realm of death and dying and the realm of the ancestors. You know, we have to acknowledge that energy is there behind us, supporting us, and that we wouldn't be here where we are now if it wasn't for that transmission of energy. So I feel very strongly in this work, this is what is trying to come through. And I think it's important. And we can go into various factors about it if you would like.
I'd be very interested as soon as you were saying that, Jeff, I would love for you to share with him that moment at the altar when they all showed up. But before you get there, Paul, what I heard when you were talking was to find a way to add more ceremony to what we're doing. Does that sound logical or even appropriate? There was a little bit of it in the beginning, which is what I'm calling the shift state, getting people prepared for the process. Within the context of the process, it was process. And then at the end, we did a little bit more of a clearing meditation sort of thing, but there wasn't much in the way of included ceremony, which I think might be pretty impactful over the course of a weekend for sure. And I don't mean medicine. And medicine, we've talked about actually medicine in maybe a week-long process, but that would be something completely different and a different experience. But just for the purpose of creating this, based on what you're experiencing and feeling about it, I'm curious what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say almost certainly to ritualize and have ceremonial structure for these things. You know, you're invoking powerful energies, you're making contact with powerful energies, you're coming up against those energies. And, you know, it's always good to have some kind of safety mechanism in place. And there's always good to have some kind of, you know, acknowledgement that's the work that you're doing, you know, offerings to the spirit and by asking for guidance and things of this nature. You know, you're working with powerful energies in that realm. And I feel it's not just coming from that kind of, you know, the realm of the dead or the realm of that, but also the Kundalini energy, which is kind of responsible for these spontaneous body movements that you're describing, Jeff, you know, these sort of inner movements or priyas as they're known within the yogic tradition, you know, which can take on very, very sophisticated and sort of interesting forms later on, you know, to the point where we're beginning to throw the body into automatic asanas. The body automatically begins to go through kind of qigong movements or internal martial art practices or things like this of its own accord, just as awakening of this energy. And as we come up against these sources of power, being in the realm of death or be they via the medicines or via both, of course, can obviously very strongly stimulate the awakening of our own inner current, our own inner sort of evolutionary potential, as it were. And so these sort of forces combining to bring forth this work, I would say.
Cool.
You know, I think hospice is about as close as we have in the United States to any organization that attempts to do what you're talking about, Paul. And the people that I know that are working with hospice, they always have such miraculous, supernatural stories to tell about that death and dying process.
I mean, we really need to re-establish that knowledge in the West, you know, and perhaps, of course, not just in the West. I mean, of course, that knowledge has been pretty much lost outside of the mystical and spiritual schools across the board, of course. And it is essential knowledge. I mean, you know, from the perspective of the mystical traditions, the reason that we keep getting caught up in this sort of endless cycle of incarnation is because we're not learning how to die correctly. You know, we're not learning how to navigate that correctly. So we kind of perpetuate the story, as it were.
I'm just thinking, when you say die correctly, I'm thinking the way that we do it in the West is we keep people comfortable. We get them all up on morphine and, you know, we completely remove the pain. And that's probably not the way nature had designed
it. It's not a good idea. No, you really want to go into that after death condition with full consciousness.
Wow. That's profound what you just said.
Of course, it's not always possible. Of course, we need to take in consideration, you know, realms of extreme pain that people can't handle, you know, but as much as we're able to, that's definitely the journey we want to go on, because there's work to be done after we die. You know, that's not the end of the process. Yeah. And we've got to go in there with full awareness of what is happening in that realm. Yeah. Because otherwise, again, we can get caught up again and again in the cycles of rebirth instead of actually finding a way through to a kind of a more liberated state where we can choose essentially where we want to go.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, Jeff and I have talked extensively on this topic, because I've had about four, I think, significant deaths in the last year. And in each of those experiences, I've been very able to reach out. I've been very able to be in connection with them in their transition. And the one person that I was struggling with was my dad, because when he crossed, he like vanished, and I'm like, where the hell did you go? You know, and I'm searching and I'm just exploring, like, where could he? And then I realized at some point there was a sense of him being in a place that I'm not allowed to be, number one, but that he carried so much into the death process that he didn't resolve, that it all took him to this other place that he was still there processing, and resolving. And actually it wasn't until, see, he passed, when was that? Back in September, October? Was it that long ago?
Yeah.
And it was only very recently, like about 2 days ago, that he actually showed up for the first time, very briefly, but he actually showed up. Didn't say anything, didn't really engage, just showed up. And I went, oh, okay, something's changing. He's being able to come forward a little more. But prior to that, nothing. I mean, I was kind of like, I mean, nothing in the sense that no communication, no interest, no, I mean, he was so consumed by all the baggage he carried out the door that he had to go process. And he's still been in that process, apparently.
Yeah, I'm afraid we've got it in our lives. We generally take it through into those realms with us and carry it through even to our next life.
When you were talking about the best way to die is not to be on morphine or not to be on the painkillers, could we also apply that to birth, that many mothers who are having medically assisted painkillers to deliver, the baby's going to be under the influence of that too? Probably not the best way to do it.
I think it's a very, very rad. I would say on a kind of a spiritual level, it's quite a radically different process, actually. I would say, you know, perhaps not as vital as the outward going journey.
And we don't have ridiculous fear and drama about birthing as we do about dying. So
yeah, you're not aware of that.
Excuse me. So Jeff, please take a moment, please, to share that. Everybody showed up to the party moment.
Sure. In addition to starting the ceremony, each participant was asked to state an intention. And we were also asked to share a thought regarding a prayer. And then we all pulled a card that the shaman had for us to place up on the altar. So my prayer was, so the intention was, am I supposed to go to Los Angeles? And if so, what am I taking with me that's going to be different to clean up homelessness and to end it, to we can just be done with it. That was the intention. The prayer was, who's going to help? So after I'm up there at the altar, it's going to be hard to do without getting emotional again, but
darn it.
I'm sitting there for hours and I'm writing this down and I'm getting to that part about this whole thing I'm talking about to my ego sounded crazy and nobody's going to listen to me. Nobody's going to want to do it. It's just all a bunch of hooey. You're hallucinating. Stop this nonsense. So then I was just asking, it just kind of kept like as a mantra, who's going to help? Who's going to help? Show me in my mind, who's going to help me do this work? And then, so I'm sitting at an altar with all of these pictures, these 8x10 pictures of Babaji, Krishna, Jesus, Yogananda, and six others. I can't remember who they were. So there's all these pictures. And then there's also all of these vases that all represent Shiva and, you know, all the different ancient gods and energies. And so I'm sitting there. And I kept asking, who's going to help? Who's going to help? Who's going to help? And then I was just told, open your eyes. Open your eyes. Because I was sitting there in the lotus position with my eyes closed. And I opened my eyes. And every one of those pictures was looking at me. And what I got was, we are. And it was just like one of those moments of, like, okay, that'll be enough help. You know, if all of you show up to help, that will be plenty of help. Well,
one is enough, I mean.
But it was one of those very humbling, incredibly powerful moments of, we're going to help. We're going to be doing this with you.
Yeah. I feel strongly this is the way. I'm reminded, of course, of I'm not sure how aware you are of him or his sort of presence. I'm reminded, of course, in this of the history of Ramana Maharshi. Do you guys know Ramana? Okay, well, southern India, in Tiruvannamalai, there was a very, very famous saint called Ramana Maharshi, and he was around at the same time as Carl Jung. Carl Jung almost met him when he went to India, but in the end, Jung refused to meet with him, interestingly. Mm. And Ramana's story is thus, that when he is a very young man, I think he's around the age of 19, he, for no reason whatsoever, thinks he's going to die. He wasn't sick. He just thinks, I'm going to die. And he thinks, well, if I'm going to die, I better really go into this. I better see what this is, you know, as much as possible. And he lies down on the ground and he puts himself into what he calls, of course, the death posture. And he tries to simulate the death and dying process. So he puts himself as much as possible into a state of rigor mortis, into a state of catatonia, kind of switches off his senses one by one. And as a result of this very extraordinary spontaneous process, Ramana wakes up to full liberation and full enlightenment, as recognized by many tens of thousands of people who came into his presence. I myself have been in his ashram for some months at a time, and I would say that it's an extraordinarily powerful place. You walk into the room where the master gave sort of darshan or spiritual teachings, and it's like walking into a wall of silence. It's so thick and so palpable. Everybody just immediately comes into total stillness, total centeredness. And this was a direct result of this spontaneous death-like process. So I would say it has a very strong similarity to the work that you've been developing, Jeff, and the experiences that arose.
Wow.
That's fantastic. I had for the listeners too, as we talk about the experience When Jeff and I did the process with me, we actually did it remotely, because I'm in Colorado and he's in California. But similarly, there were so many parallels. I had part of what I'm dealing with now, I believe, is actually the remnants of what I was fleshing out literally. My experience was as he described, the moment of death experience was actually self-immolation, sticking a sword in my gut and routing it around and falling on the ground. What's that? Yeah.
We've all been there.
Right? Welcome to the party. But again, the thing that was remarkable was that at the moment I was able to see, I saw the body crawling across the dirt, trying to keep the guts from falling out, and all of that. And it actually brought up another aspect of this that we're being keen to address, but even to understand more deeply on the forgiveness level was, I really experienced profoundly the difference of causing one's own death versus dying. It's funny to say that because literally we always cause our own death. But in the end, in that particular experience, the suicide deal, the suicide thing has a, at least to me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Paul, is just a deep and profound impact on the psyche that I did not, after that process, my entire, literally the entire cradle was, I almost couldn't walk for 2 days. It was so wrought. Everything was like, oh my goodness. And then that migrated into this kind of funky mucousy weirdness and bronchial. So the heart's involved in this, in a major way, because it's been my intention was to kind of wanting to root out the source of the self-abuse process that I seem to put myself through on a regular basis. And that was where it lives, and that's where it landed. And so it's been quite remarkable. It's been a week or almost a week, and I did the process again. I deliberately didn't do it again immediately because I wanted to see what the energy was doing without doing it again. And then after about 4 or 5 days, when this was in full bloom, I said, okay, it's time to do it again. and make sure I've cleared the residuals and not, not left anything hanging.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is, we are both malleable and imprintable to powerful energies. So any powerful energy that we, perpetuate or we give energy to, that we feed in some way, eventually, if we do that enough, or if it's a strong or powerful enough emotion behind it, it will begin to imprint on the, more subtle bodies. And, in the end, it's considered that the body of karma is that which incarnates or goes through the incarnational cycle. And the body of karma, one can say, it's really just the storehouse of these very, very heavily imprinted energies. Now, of course, from that perspective, suicide, of course, is a very heavy energy. It's a very heavy imprint. So, that's going to have an impact on your subtle bodies. It's going to be there as we move from lifetime to lifetime. It will have an impact in that kind of fashion, as will any kind of deep trauma, as will any kind of very deep craving, any deep level of aversion. These kind of heavy emotional energies, of course, these are the ones that imprint and cause this cycle of incarnation, as opposed to this opposite kind of structure, which is the transmigrational process. The incarnational, reincarnational process really being as a result of involuntary processes, as a result of a heavily imprinted karmic body, and the transmigratory process being that which allows one to move freely in the death realms into whatever kind of body or condition one chooses, essentially.
I have to breathe. That was, I'm sorry, I'm going to use the word, that was fucking incredible. I was just like, did I just hear him say that the cycle of incarnation is specifically driven on these energies that we continue to inflict on ourselves and don't allow to process and leave? And so because we keep burdening ourselves with this baggage, we keep coming back here to try to unburden ourselves with the baggage, only to collect more baggage to keep going to do it again. And then
unless you can find a way, as you guys apparently have done, to spontaneously liberate that energy as it's accrued, or find a way to liberate the energy from the past that's already accrued. Yeah, that's always the game, essentially. That's always the game.
Just take a moment to absorb that, listeners. I hope you're taking all that in.
It gives a new way of looking at the meme of wash, rinse, repeat, doesn't it?
I'm afraid it does. Yeah, I like that. I like the old joke. The Zen master was a Zen student. Student says to master, what happens after death? Master says, this.
Paul, what I caught about that download you gave us was that we want to get to the point where we can be mindful or choose which lives and incarnations we go into. But if we're not at that place, we're spontaneously, it's almost like there's a, you didn't do the work. There was something you didn't complete. So you literally are directed, like there's some kind of auto way that directs back in.
Absolutely. It's simply the nature of energy. We're simply talking about the law of thermodynamics, that every action has an equal and opposite reaction, that there's an energy that needs to play itself out. And, you know, that energy is the energy that gets caught up in the subtle bodies, you know, and that is what perpetuates the cycle of incarnation over and over again. Yeah, essentially.
Just, I'm curious. I like to ask different people that study all of this. How many times do you think the average person in this time in history has been here?
The Buddha said, we have been here for the amount of lives it takes for a bird with a silk handkerchief in its mouth to fly around a gigantic mountain once every 100 years, lightly brushing the mountain, and the time it takes for the mountain to get worn down to sand is the amount of lifetimes we have been here for.
Good Lord.
Jaw on the floor.
That's more than a few.
It's certainly more than a few. And of course, it has to take in a rather extended or non-traditional model of human history, of course, to account for.
Wow.
And when we talk about be here, are there also other places we could be that aren't here?
Well, the interesting thing, of course, is, you know, that actually the apparent linearity, the apparent kind of, you know, movement from lifetime to lifetimes is itself only a part of a kind of a time-based or temporal illusion. You know, actually, really, all lifetimes are happening simultaneously in one go. It isn't a linear process. So it's only, where is consciousness crystallized? Where is it constellated? Is it constellated in this body, or are we free in it in a manner of choosing to move it from, you know, body to body, or from realm to realm, or from dimension to dimension? You know, most of us are not, of course. Most of us are heavily crystallized or constellated into a single structure. But as you move outside of the temporal stream via the psychedelics, via the medicines, via meditation, or, you know, trance-based practices, of course, then you can access the other lifetime streams that are, in fact, also happening right now, but you're not so aware of them.
That's awesome. So where does this take us now? We've kind of come to a full circle place, in the sense that, Jeff, you've shared the kind of bringing to a close of that experience. Paul has brought some incredible insights and even deeper understanding to much of what that experience has been. And how would we like to bring this part of the experience to a close at this point?
My question would be back to Paul. Can you think of anything, encourage us in any way of moving forward with the workshop? Something that you believe we could include that we're not, or keep doing what we're doing?
I think that there's a high potential here. I see that there's a possibility of it going slightly awry, though. And I think it's important to emphasize with people that this isn't some kind of exploration of other lives or past lives, you know, and taking it into that kind of realm, but is in fact the kind of a path through to a more liberated state that is beyond the kind of egoic storyline that can very easily accrue from attachment to past life phenomenon or storylines. You know, it's very easy for the ego to jump all over that and to make claims and to, you know, get some kind of new identity based on that which is already past and is no longer present, in fact. And, you know, really all we're trying to do and what we want to emphasize, I feel, is the liberation of the energy that has become accumulated as a result of all of these past lives and their experiences, in order that actually we can move beyond that kind of process entirely as a completely free being.
Interesting.
And awesome that you say that, because it is not a focus of what this work is. And Jeff, I know on two different occasions, I think, that I've heard as we were doing this, specifically said something about not focusing on past life, that this is not, you know, you may or may not believe that, and it's really irrelevant to this process, because it was in talking about the fact that you go in and you find this thing and you strike this pose, you release this energy, and you have this image. And of course, people are going to be like, well, what am I looking at? You know, what is this picture? So it doesn't matter. It is what it is and what it is. And I think I followed up with Jeff's comment to say, it doesn't matter what it is, but what it is highly personal to you. Whatever it is, it's highly personal to your experience and to your process and evolution. And it may make no sense to anybody else, and it doesn't matter.
I would even be more radical. I would say it's entirely non-personal. And in that, you liberate all of its accumulated energy.
Oh, I love that. Entirely non-personal. So... yeah, because that again, yeah, it ties to another piece of this understanding for me, is that I've for a long time have believed that when something becomes attached to your field or lodged in your field, usually it's the emotional component that creates that stuckness, and it goes out the way it came in, meaning if it was whatever the trauma was, that's going to show up, but it's only going to show up as a thing. It's not going to show up as an event. It's going to show up as, you'll have a memory of X, whatever that is. And you let that memory pass and you don't attach to it. It's gone, it's done, and it's now going to move out of your field. Does that sound legitimate or logical?
Exactly. Otherwise, of course, there's always the possibility of the ego complex just reattaching to it as another form of its own identity, you know, creating new identities and more restriction really in the psyche as a result of that, instead of recognizing it as simply an energy that needs to be liberated and freed up in order to make space or free up the energy for other uses, or, you know, really actually ultimately, of course, so that we can understand the nature of ourselves, the true nature of ourselves, beyond the conditioning that has accrued.
I've got a couple more questions before we finish this part up. When I was under the influence of the plant-based medicines, what kept coming to me was this, it wasn't just a death experience, it was the precise moment of death. It was the point at which the sword went into the body, the point at which the realization of, I'm mortally wounded. This is a lethal blow that has occurred. And it was as if a snapshot was taken in time of that exact moment. And that's what is stored in our field. That's what kept coming to. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, well, of course, again, as I say, any heavily emotional, impactful experience, you get a sword driven through your belly. That's pretty importful, so that imprints very heavily. But of course, it doesn't mean that it's not the only time that we get imprinted. Of course, heavy traumas and abuse and, loss of love and heartbreak and things like this, really anything that causes a big upheaval of our energetic system on an emotional, mental or physical level, is going to do it in some way or another ultimately. But of course, yes, the moment of death plays a big impact, and we work with that from lifetime to lifetime also. It's a big deal for us. We tend to forget about it, but it's kind of there lurking, as it were,
Beautiful. The other thing that we've discovered is, let's say it was my third rib up where I took a lethal blow in one experience, and then three or four lifetimes later, I had another injury in that same place and or nearby, but it's like that area in my body seems to be the pain sponge. Is there any...
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's exactly like that. Pains in this lifetime are very often manifesting from, experience of this nature in other lifetimes, phobias and things like this also from other lifetimes, fear of various water and fire and things like this often indicate burning and hanging, these kind of things, or drowning rather. And they all play a very big role. They all impact us. We're not usually aware of these forces playing out, but they're there.
Yeah, we were recognizing actually at the end of when we were doing our debrief, we were talking about, particularly with the weekend process, that we would actually do them in segments, meaning we would do an emotional segment, we'd do a mental segment, we'd do a spiritual segment, we'd do a physical segment. So there would be the ability to touch those pains that were those things that, like for me, the belly wasn't a painful place, it was an uncomfortable place. So, and it was, I knew it was more, a much more emotional thing than it was a physical pain thing, where I know Jeff has, and some of the people in the room were actually dealing with physical muscle cramp stuff, and it was really apparent that it's good to, well, maybe it's a good question, is it good to delineate in that fashion, or is it just better to let it stay lumped and let people find their own?
Well, it's an interesting question. The thing is, the journey becomes very convoluted if we trace every aspect of every samskara. These are known as the samskaras, of course, within the sort of vipassana or on sort of Buddhist traditions, these impactful kind of, energetic experiences. And, of course, while there are various ways to begin to deal with samskara, S-A-M. S-A-M-S-K-A-R-A, samskara. Yeah. And these can be released, via various bodies. They can be released via the mental body. They can be released via the emotional body. They can be released via the physical body. And, of course, various samskaras, just because it's a useful word now that we understand it a little bit more. Various samskaras, they imprint in various ways, so they can be released in various ways, but you're going to go chasing down a lot of rabbit holes if you need to determine whether or not it's going to be a mental samskara or an emotional samskara, a physical samskara each and every time. It can be more useful, I would say, to dissolve the whole thing down to the field of energy, down to the field of kind of energetic blockage and energetic kind of stagnation and things of this nature, and deal with it primarily through the kinesthetic somatic sense, really going into the felt sense of the body and to feel as deeply as possible into the body in order to be able to get down to these energetic constructs that are causing, that are a manifestation of tension or blockage, or subsequently create tension or blockage in the system, whichever way round it is. you know, that these energy constellates are there within the energy body. And if we melt them on an energetic level, if we melt them on a kind of a physiological, kinesthetic, somatic level, they usually dissolve out through the other bodies quite easily, and we don't necessarily need to engage them at that level. We can do, but we don't necessarily always need to, I would say.
Paul, I've got to ask you, what is it like for you, who has studied all of this for 30 years, and you practice this, you make your profession doing what we're talking about? What is it like for you to hear Jim and I talk about this with not knowing anything about the terminology, without knowing anything about the history of it, but yet we're doing this. What is that like for you?
I think it's, you know, I take it all in a very kind of natural way. You know, of course, how did these systems develop in the first place? They developed via plant medicines. Of course, you know, we can find a mystical or an entheogenic route to all of the religious or mystical systems out there, I would say. So that they're always spontaneous developments that somewhere along the line, you know, whether facilitated by plant medicines, whether facilitated by trance states or by meditation or by, you know, more extreme methodologies, whatever it might be, you know, this is how these techniques and methodologies and conceptions arise automatically. You know, they're coming out of these deep interior spaces, ultimately. Though I'm not surprised, and I think it's good. I think that, again, the fact that you don't know necessarily, that adds confirmation to the work rather than detracts from it. I think that it just shows that, of course, you're tapping into something authentic that, although has not necessarily been done in precisely the same way, has been talked about and has been, you know, analyzed and looked at to some considerable degree in other cultures and traditions, and that it all kind of blends together and merges together in, you know, what can be a very effective path for us as Westerners engaging with this material really for the very first time.
Yeah, fantastic. Well. So we are going to bring this particular episode to a close. Paul, thank you so much for amazing insights and wonderful contribution to even helping us to better understand our own process here, which is quite extraordinary. So we're excited to be able to roll this out to all of you guys out there in listening land, and that will be coming over the next couple months. Be looking for that as we begin and continue this enormous transformation that Adventures in Truth podcast is going through, even in the midst of all of this. So there's all kinds of amazing things coming down the pike, and we'll keep you posted. We're so glad you're here and so glad that you're participating with us in this process as we navigate just like you're navigating. So we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks for taking this dive with us, and have an amazing day.
So long, everyone.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.